Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to week four of the game plan on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I am joined by my guest host for this series, former NFL coach Charlie Coyner. Coach Coyner, great to be here in week four.
Week four, where does the season go? Amazing how fast.
Well, definitely. And as we head through the season, one of the topics you and I felt was important to touch on was the strength and conditioning aspect of this, because we build our whole offseason around it. I know coaches, most coaches now at least, are going to pay attention to making sure they find a way to at least maintain those gains they've made in the off season. But it's like, you know, out there is so much information now, Charlie, sometimes it becomes overwhelming as to what is the most relevant, and especially what is the most relevant to our athletes, because there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, for us common folk who sit in the stands and watch the game now, or sit in front of the TV and watch the game. And so what we're thinking about is health and nutrition is much different than what we need to talk about for our athletes. And it's changed over time. We've become a lot more knowledgeable in that area. We've folded in things much more with the nutrition and the rest and all those things. And I think that's going to be one of our main focuses today. And I'm excited that we're going to have the assistant strength and conditioning coach for the Miami Dolphins, James Arthur, on with us.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to work with Jimmy in Chicago, and he is an extremely intelligent guy, and a little bit different than, and there's nothing wrong. I'm a bit of a throwback myself, but Jimmy comes from the scientific part of it, and everything that we're going to hear from him is going to be based on science. And I don't know that you can do it any other way these days, because it's working hand in hand with the trainer, working hand in hand with the head coach. And something you just said right there, Keith, is exactly right, where we not only confuse the information that we get for the guy on the couch like me and the guy out there running for four quarters, but football is an interesting sport from the standpoint of how many different body types are out there on that field and what they do during a game. And, you know, you're sitting there and you're running a spread offense or whatever offense, but that left guard, what he's asked to do physically and the amount he's going to run and the physical exertion he's going to put pushing on another guy the same size is nothing like what the wideout is going to be doing when he's running routes and maybe running guys off in man coverage or blocking his space. Then you look at that compared to a tight end who's a hybrid and a running back. There's just so many different body types that I don't know how any one person could keep up with it and be a coach. The head coach, it's his job to kind of oversee everything. But I've been fortunate enough to, I've coached a lot of different positions. And as a position coach, you want to focus on what your guy needs. And you want to lean on somebody like a strength and conditioning coach, someone with a science background to help you with what they need. And it might be entirely different than the guy sitting next to you in the staff room.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing I've learned here over the course of doing this podcast is typically what has been kind of, especially as you hit the in season, almost a cookie cutter approach that every single athlete is essentially doing the same thing is not the optimal way to do it. There's certainly several ways you could do it. And I think most high school coaches, even small college coaches who don't have strength and conditioning staff, are wearing a ton of hats, and this is one that, you know, maybe gets put in some ways on the back burner. So they're going to do something that is going to work for in general for the whole group, where we need to start looking at the needs of our individual position. And from kind of the knowledge I've gained over, you know, like I said, the course of talking to some guys on this podcast, I'm starting to feel that at the high school level, at the small college level, that as a position coach, you kind of got to speak up and start helping with developing the strength and conditioning program for your particular athletes, that it almost needs to become a little bit more individualized, like you said, for all the different body types that are out there.
I don't see how you would do it any other way. And then once again, the high school model, if you're actually coaching a position, let's say you're coaching the defensive line or you're coaching the tight ends, and you're also strength and conditioning coach, once again, to me, the process would have to be, if you're wearing a strength and conditioning hat, it looks like to me you would need to have a rapport and a sit down with every position coach and give them the outline so that they can take ownership, because we're all guilty of this. We pull the players in so many different directions at every level of football. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're coaching in high school and you want to teach them the game plan. You want to teach them how to step with the proper foot. You want to make sure that they're going to class. You want to make sure that they're doing the right things off the field, and you want to make sure they're staying in shape. So it's real easy, like you just said, to let that conditioning part go. But then all of a sudden, we look up and going into the third game, and there's a pulled hamstring. And now we don't have our best player, you know, because we've got just our priorities. So many things that could have gone into that, from the nutrition that the player was or was not getting at home, to how much effort and running was put into practice, to a lot of different things. So it's, in my opinion, once again, I started coaching back in 1983. It is maybe still underrated, but we have come a long way in the upper levels of football, me and the NFL, where they've got 2 and 3 strength and conditioning coaches along with a training staff that works hand in hand. And in college football, you've got a lot of the same things. And then even I've noticed, you know, over the past couple of years, that there seems to be somebody that is responsible for that for every high school program. And I don't know that that was always true.
No, definitely we've seen a change in how those are structured. And, you know, it's exciting to be talking to Jim Arthur today. And, Coach, let's get into that, because I know we're not going to be able to go down the rabbit holes with him and into all the different areas of strength and conditioning there are. But I think we're going to be able to bring out some good tips that can help you and your team right now with some issues you may be facing. So real quick, before we get Coach Arthur on the phone, he is in his 17th season now in the NFL, his third with the Miami Dolphins as the assistant strength and conditioning coach. Before that, he was with the strength and conditioning staff of the Chicago Bears, which included 7 years as the team's head strength and conditioning coach. And then prior to that, he spent time with the Buffalo Bills, which is where you met him. So a lot of experience here. Like you said, a lot of science behind what he's doing. And let's get right to it with Coach. Well, joining us on the podcast now is Jim Arthur, the assistant strength and conditioning coach for the Miami Dolphins. Coach, it's great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you, Keith.
Jimmy, great to have you with us today.
Great. Thank you. I'm excited.
Well, Coach, this is a time of the year. We've, as high school coaches, small college coaches, guys out there who got to do it on their own, they don't have necessarily a strength and conditioning coach at their fingertips. It's a time of the year where we have to find the right balance of training load, especially as we get to mid-season and end of season, that's going to be right for our athletes. And I think the challenge at the high school level, compared to what you're doing working with elite, very developed athletes, is that we have a range of guys who are going to come to us, from guys who are really just starting to develop to guys who maybe are getting more towards that peak of where they can be. With that in mind, Coach, what kinds of things would you recommend for in season here, so that especially as we're getting towards the end and those teams who want to make it past week 10 of the season have what they need in the tank to get there?
Well, I actually think there is a lot of carryover, even though there's different level athletes. We kind of deal with the same issues as the season goes on. There's a fine line because some guys are overtrained, more worn out, and some guys may get undertrained from not doing as much as the year goes on. So as far as them being in shape and energy levels, how they're performing, it's a big thing, I think, at any level, to see kind of where they're at without doing too much, but making sure they're still in shape. So as far as conditioning-wise, I mean, we don't really, especially on the higher-level practice days, we wouldn't do any extra conditioning. But the part that we do kind of concerned with is that guys kind of hit close to what their top speeds are at least once a week. Some positions, the guys will go they may play a whole game, like a DB, for instance, may play a whole game and never hit their top speed one game, and the next game they may have to, just because of the situation, have to hit top speed all of a sudden. So mm-hmm. as far as a conditioning level, making sure that they at least can taste close, doesn't have to be full speed, but close 90-95% of what their top speed is once or twice a week. With that being said, some guys may do it the whole, have to run more the whole game. Even special teams guys, a lot of times they're running further, so they have to hit the top speed a lot more often than the other positions. So we try to have them kind of taste that level, but with doing that, the volume from that has to be real low. You worry about guys at the end, just their legs wearing out, not having any energy. So doing too much for sure can have a negative effect. We're kind of just choosing the right type of intensity for it.
How do you know, Jimmy? I mean, it sounds like to me that you're working, one thing you just said that jumped out to me is that you said different players, some players may suffer because they're not doing enough, and some players may suffer because they're doing too much. Now, I got to believe, being a 30-year position coach myself and coached a lot of different positions, that some of that is talking about maybe an offensive guard as compared to the receiver in a spread offense. And some of it, though, you might be talking about Charlie Coyner as compared to Keith Grabowski, you know, what we do with them. And Keith may be the guy that's running the kid into the ground, and I might be the guy that's too soft on him throughout the season. Am I on something there?
Sure, exactly. I mean, for one, as far as running-wise, just talking about that and the condition, like a lineman doesn't need, obviously, what wide receiver is going to need. So I know for guys in high school, it's kind of taking the team as a whole when you're looking at conditioning. So, like, for instance, if we were to do a shorter, like a 10-second run with guys, your lineman, the distance would be considerably less with skill positions. And then I think part of it, to kind of make it so that it's enough for some guys and not too much for others, is just keeping the intensity with it higher and the volume just really on the lower end of it. So that the guys that are getting too much, it's not adding even more to that or barely adding more to it. And then the guys that are way under, at least they're getting a small taste of it. But I mean, that's kind of the whole challenge with all of it, I think, at any level, is that, you know, you have guys at different ends. I mean, probably how much, even in one game, offensive guys may be on the field twice as many plays one game versus the next game, and vice versa with defense. So I think kind of getting a feel for that, like when they may need it more than not need it. But again, it's still the fatigue and doing too much oftentimes can be more detrimental than guys not being in shape, if that makes sense. So the practice has to be what it has to be, as far as plays and the individual, whatever the guys are doing in practice. I mean, that's kind of, by our standpoint, the coaches are doing kind of what they feel that they need to do at the time. So as far as any extra conditioning, usually we would try to err on the side of less is more. I mean, the majority, I think, especially in high school also, that toward the end, it's just the cumulative fatigue of the season also. So as far as having to do too much, I definitely say to err on the side of less. And then if you are doing anything, just kind of make sure that they taste some of that, you know, higher end of it versus, you know, doing a lot of aerobic conditioning where you're kind of wearing the guys out, especially as the season goes on. I mean, back in the off season and before the season starts, it's a little bit different story. But really, I think at any level, trying to battle the fatigue, whether it's muscles are fatigued and the guys may pull something, or just fatigued and they can't, you know, perform to the level. A big part of battling the fatigue is kind of fueling the athletes, getting the right fuel in them. And I know that, you know, there's a big buzz for nutrition and, you know, healthy eating and stuff, but really, especially for football players, it's not really complicated at all. They just need, really, carbohydrates is a big thing. And the more you can get in guys, even in high school, I mean, guys are younger and more resilient, but still, that's the fuel that they're running on. So the more you can get them with, you know, higher, not skipping meals and eating, make sure they're getting carbs, is going to push that fatigue a lot further down from when they're going to get tired versus guys that don't have any energy, aren't eating well.
Coach, with the nutrition side of things, you mentioned the carbohydrates, but thinking more like post-game, so for the high school guys, Saturday, for the college guys, Sunday, is there anything you recommend on the nutrition side that's going to help them, you know, especially in terms of the inflammation and some of the things that they'll be dealing with the day after the game.
Really, on any level, I mean, there's kind of specific things you can do, but still the carbohydrate end of it is still what's probably lacking the most. So, for instance, like if we spend too much time kind of like, so in general for inflammation, like even fish oils or different berries and like chia juice, and I'll definitely help with that. But the carbohydrate issue is so much bigger that until you really attack that and take care of that first, like then you can kind of go and do the other little things that might help. It's just, it's amazing how much, especially the guys that run. So you linemen that aren't necessarily running as much aren't fatiguing their muscles that way. But the guys that run, I mean, even at the high school or college level, they made enough to get by, but for what they need, especially, depending on the days and the higher practice days and the game days, like the thing you're worried about the most is they're not getting the carbohydrates back, especially for, you know, levels where you may not have as many resources of what you can give guys, like budget-wise or what's legal that you can hand out. Like one thing that when you don't have things readily available, it's easy, good to give to guys, even like low-fat chocolate milk, because they get some protein, the protein end of it is, you know, for muscle recovery is a big thing. We're not saying that it's not, but most of the guys are gonna at least be close on that end, but still pretty far lacking in the carbohydrate. And just in general, a guy that's low on protein, they may not feel as great, but you don't have the same fear of, you know, they're going to pull a muscle or just be fatigued as much as when they're not getting the carbohydrates they need.
So, Jim, you talked a lot about, at least what I'm hearing, it sounds a lot, which makes sense at the NFL level, about the running part of it. When you're dealing with a high school kid, they busted their tail pretty much the whole off season in the weight room. I've always, and I remember back in the old days, 30 years ago or whatever, when pretty much that's what strength coaches did. They got them big and fast and ready to go. And we took them as coaches, and there was some interaction, but it wasn't quite like, it's not anything like what it is today. But what about in the weight room, 15, 16, 17 year old, ready to go game 8, 9, 10, and then you hit the playoffs, because you don't want a kid to wither up on you and not be anything like what he was at the beginning of the season. But you also, the last thing a strength coach ever wants to do is walk in and tell the head coach that, you know, he just got his running back hurt in the weight room or something like that, tearing a pec. So what would you offer as advice to the high school coaches in the weight room as far as the strength part of it goes?
Very similar to the running and conditioning end of it, whereas they kind of want to keep the intensity higher, I'm not saying that the guys are maxing out every day, but keeping the strength higher and the volume down. So a rep range, different exercises, obviously, without getting specific, but different exercises are different, but, you know, keeping your rep ranges 3 to 5 or so, and keeping the weights up, keeping the guys' strength up, keeping their power up, but just really keeping the volume low without doing too much there. And again, I don't mean like they have to max out or go to failure on different exercises, but keeping them, pushing them that way, you can keep them strong without really having to do a lot, I guess, if you're keeping the numbers high, especially doing the bigger lifts. And then also just keeping things balanced is a big thing. Like, for instance, lower body, you know, making sure the glutes and the hamstrings are strong, as well as just doing like a heavy squat.
So once again, never having been an expert at all in that area, what I heard you just say as a coach, I'm looking for fewer reps and to keep the weight up, and don't get them in there and have them doing 15 reps at lower weights.
Right. And even just the total volume of work. You know, they don't need to spend hours in the weight room in season. You know, you can get them in and out, and they're more compliant with that also. They're kind of, you know, picking the things that are important. Again, keeping the intensity higher and just not even doing, you know, 20 different lifts and that. Just kind of getting them in, getting them out, focus on what's important.
Coach, you mentioned quite a bit about the running here, and when we look at some of the things that can happen to players over the course of the season, outside of those injuries that happen on the field, one that seems to come up again and again is, especially for our guys who run, are the hamstrings. And once you get one of those, even if it's just a slight pull, it seems to be something that nags that player throughout the course of the season. What things can we do to avoid some of those injuries, especially like that, come from, I guess, overuse or overexertion?
Part of that I kind of just started to touch on, but like the balance of strength, especially in the lower body. In general, like you hear, we'll talk a lot about like pelvic balance, and without getting too deep into that, just got like, especially when players are younger, high school, college, a lot of times they'll do a lot of heavy squatting and a lot of running for that matter. And what happens is the front side will get tighter, their quads and hip flexors will get tight. We'll kind of see, we'll call it, you know, say pelvic balance, and say like a pelvic tilt. So like seeing a guy that is like short in the quads and hamstrings, I'm sorry, quad and hip flexors, and their pelvis kind of rotates forward, and you'll see like the real arch low back. So you know that those guys, the hips kind of are rolled forward, and the hamstrings are actually on stretch, so they're longer than what their resting length should be. So what happens is those are the hamstrings that usually can pull a lot easier than the others, than when the pelvic is balanced the way it should be. And the reason is just that muscle is longer than it should be, and it's also got to overwork to overcome the front side, and it just becomes weaker, and then that's when you have problems. So a stretching of really of the hamstrings when that's the issue actually makes it worse. Like you see a lot of the guys will be, you know, they'll think their hamstrings are tight, have issues, and you'll see stretching the hamstrings, and that actually makes it worse because it allows the front side to get shorter, and it lets the back side keep getting longer, which isn't necessarily what you want. So first way to attack that is actually lengthening the front. So any time spent like stretching wise should be more quads, hip flexors, try to get that kind of pelvis back to neutral. And then that, just doing that alone kind of helps the hamstrings just work the way they should easier. And once you get that and start to get balanced, and now strengthening like the backside, strengthening the hamstrings is a big thing. It's hard to do that when the front is so tight because it's always kind of working against it. So getting the front out, strengthening the back, and it doesn't have to be anything really fancy either. I mean, there's a lot of functional exercises you can do for the hamstrings, which are great, but just making sure they stay strong with a simple hamstring curl, you know, overload, keep making sure they get stronger and stronger, I mean, is a good thing. And because that strong hamstring that can function right is going to be a lot less likely to pull. But then going along with that also, if the pelvis is rotated forward, a lot of times the glute too doesn't work the way it should. So making sure that the glutes are strong, the glutes are working the way they should, which again, kind of got to make sure that front side is loose so the glute can fire. What happens if the glute's not working as good, the hamstring kind of has to overwork, and that's also what causes issues. So all kind of ties in together. So lengthen the front, make sure the glute is working, make sure the hamstrings are strong is a big part of all that for any level. And then the other part of it also is the fueling end of it too, because that muscle that doesn't have the like carbohydrate glycogen in it is going to be a lot more susceptible to pulls than muscle that's well hydrated. And we talk about the carbohydrates and hydration kind of in the same sentence because they're tied in together. The guy's low on carbohydrate, they also can't store water as well, so they become dehydrated too. That's when they can cramp, have issues with that as well. So all that's kind of tied in together.
So that's all based on what I'm hearing you say is the prevention and training camp as you go through it. If you're into the season or you're into a game and all of a sudden, and you just mentioned it, sometimes that players, it sounds like they work on the wrong thing, but they feel it tightening up in a game. And that kind of brings me a little bit to the point. You just went through the longest game in NFL history last night, at least since back in 1960s, I'm my guess, but which is probably pretty interesting, trying to keep players during the game loose. And you had to be worried last night as you played the Titans, or I guess it was an afternoon game turned into a night game. Just how do you keep those guys loose? What were your thoughts then? And also just try to parlay that in, if you can, to a high school coach as you get into the game and all of a sudden you're starting running back comes over and starts talking and starts, you know, rubbing back there. Are you saying that you need to work the quads? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, more often than it is, obviously, different situation at different times, but more often than not, the issue would be coming from the front side. So, if you're into a game and a guy's got issues, I mean, obviously, the athletic trainers and PTs, if you have them, truly go a little more in depth, and you know, they're kind of checking the muscle and checking the strength, which is all good and protocol that you want to focus on. But you know, even with just the tightening in the beginning, it's not a serious issue. Generally, you'll get more and be able to better serve the issue. Yeah, stretching the front side and kind of getting the pelvis to go back to neutral a little more than just stretching the hamstring. Because if that hamstring is on stretch, even though it feels like it needs to be stretched there, it's the stretching connection of the hamstring can make it worse. So generally, especially if it's not a major thing that's happened, but yeah, stretching that front side can oftentimes help more than stretching the back.
That's interesting. I can say for 30 years I coached once again, and I never knew that. So that's why we need guys like yourself.
I guess a while ago now, but they had the epidemic in baseball that they were talking about. It was all over, watching on TV and whatnot, and guys were kind of the repeated pulls of the hamstrings and stuff. And then they put it on, and they'd always show just the trainers or whoever stretching the hamstrings when usually that's not the issue. I think now it's better understood than it was even 10 years ago or so, and people are starting to understand that the issues are a lot of times in the front as far as tightness-wise, and the back is a strengthening issue. I think it's definitely gotten better, but it's not uncommon at all that, you know, that you would think, oh, if your hamstrings cut it, stretch that. But I think that's why a lot of times it'll become a nagging issue and never really correct itself until you kind of just move in the way they should.
Makes sense.
I think Coach Charlie, Coach Arthur, I know we hit on the topics we had listed here. Charlie, anything else we want to get here?
The only thing I was thinking about is just, I'm trying to, as Jimmy's talking, just think about a high school program. Keith, I don't know. Is it typically the defensive line coach? Is he the strength and conditioning coach? How does it work? Is it,
you know, sometimes it seems to get more and more. It's like the younger coach, I guess, because those guys have been closer to, you know, the latest strength and conditioning. Especially if they've been able to be at a good program, that they probably understand it a little bit more. But sometimes it is that old school guy who is doing stuff that's 40 years old or whatever. So I think you see a wide range of it. Yeah, it's different at every place. So, Coach, it was great to hear some of these ideas today. I think a lot of this, some of it, the pendulum swings back and forth with the information we get. But I know, like, in our society in general, like, carbohydrates have become a bad thing, and we forget about the athlete who's completely different than the guy who's going to sit and watch TV on his couch, and that we have to keep some of those things in mind. And then I think you brought to light some important things in terms of taking care of our athletes, whether that's, you know, the running they do, what they're doing in the weight room, or how they take care of something like their hamstrings. So definitely appreciate you sharing that information with us.
Sure, no problem. Thank you very much.
And Jimmy, just to close out, once again, it's interesting some of the things that you said today that, once again, I've been around football all my life and didn't know it. And the thing that kept jumping out at me as you're talking is that if I'm in a high school program and I'm coaching a position and I'm maybe teaching math and I got a family and I'm also in charge of the strength and conditioning part of it, to me, it would be like a lot of things. I would need to go find a trusted resource that I could lean on unless I had someone in my background. So some of the things that we talked about today, are there any charts or that type of thing where you might be able to share them with us so we can put them out there for the guys that are actually working in the field as a high school strength and conditioning coach and a position coach?
Yeah, for sure. So one, as far as the conditioning-wise, I have a good chart that's basically just kind of explaining that as the time goes down, the time of the, like if you're talking about sprint work or interval training, as the time goes down, the intensity goes up, and about what the intensity should be for the time and duration of the sprint. That's just kind of a good guide as to how to progress your program and be more applicable with the off season kind of leading into the season, but then just an in season kind of, if you're, you know, doing your higher intense bouts, you know, about what the time should be and about what the percentage of the intensity should be. And then also as far as just the public balance that we talked about, just a couple of slides on there that kind of just show the issue of what happens when pelvis rotates forward and the hamstrings get put on stretch, and then where kind of what happens structurally when you overstretch them, and how the hamstrings look versus how like the quads and the low back and the abs look.
Sounds good. That'll be something that I'm sure they'll appreciate. Jimmy, thank you very much. Appreciate your time right in the middle of a busy NFL season. Congratulations on your first win, and keep it up.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Coach. Take care. Coach, I think we heard some recurring themes there with Coach and some things that stuck out in my mind. Number one, the carbohydrates, which I think is a lot different than what we hear and get the focus on protein side of things so much right now. You know, he emphasized, especially in recovery, how important those carbohydrates are. And then some things, both as he was talking about work you can do in season, as well as addressing some of those specific issues, like he said, with the hamstrings, that there's certain things you need to look at and do that probably, I would say, after hearing that, aren't quite what I would have thought of. I mean, I know anytime there's been a hamstring injury, he's right. We go right to stretching it, and that's distinctly different than what he recommends.
That's right. The thing that jumped out at me was the same thing, but the word balance kept coming up. And it just makes so much sense, because I relate it to my 58-year-old body that I've learned that if I go out and my right knee is screwing up and I favor it, then the next week my left hip is going to be screwing up, and then all of a sudden it's going to be my back. And really, that's just the way the body, when you think about it, is put together. And with the athletes, they're so fine-tuned these days, particularly the ones that he's working with. But even just look at the pictures of some of these 17 and 18-year-old high school guys. They're already cut up, and they're fine-tuned. And they're spending a lot of time in the weight room, and they've got that picture of what they want to look like and what they want to be able to do physically. And when you do that, when you fine tune yourself, even at a young age like that, that's where the balance comes in, because you've got a young guy in the weight room without a whole lot of guidance, and all of a sudden he's got the biggest quads in the, you know, three counties, but he hadn't done enough hamstring work or vice versa. And you're asking for a problem. And typically the guy coaching him, and I'm not being critical of anybody at any level here, I never knew in college, in the NFL, when I was coaching a guy, I was always fortunate to have a Jimmy Arthur around or somebody like that to ask and to tell the player, you better go talk to them about what you're doing, because you're not going to get a whole lot of guidance here, because I don't know. But I think that's where these days, if I was a high school coach, I would definitely try to find someone to be that reference and to lean on for this kind of stuff, because there's no difference in a high school, college, NFL program. If you get to the end of your season and you've lost three or four people because of hamstrings, because you haven't trained them right, then that can just decimate your whole team.
Yeah, and it's really something you need to look at. And I think, in my opinion, you should be charting the injuries. If your training staff doesn't, you should be doing it, charting those injuries that you have over the course of the season. And I think as you start to get that data, you're going to be able to learn a little bit about the needs of your strength and conditioning program. Sometimes, you know, you'll see an excessive amount of knees, and talking about balance, that maybe you were overdeveloped in the quads, and that caused some of the knee injuries, or the other way around, there's issues with the hamstrings. So keep track of those. I would say also good practice, and our trainers used to do it at the college level, was every Monday they'd show up and they would want to see the clip where a player was injured, so they could start to identify how did that injury occur. And sometimes it could be traced right back to maybe something you did in your strength and conditioning program. Sometimes it's just the things that happen out on the field. But definitely accumulate that data and start to look at those trends you might see. And I think it's going to at least take you to some research that can help you find those answers that you need to make your strength and conditioning program better.
There's that word data again. Like I said a couple weeks ago, it's really what it gets down to is just accumulating the information that's provided to you. And you're right. Why would you not? Why would you not, particularly if you've been in a program for 3 or 4 years and you're doing things, that's your guts, the way that you're running it. Now you want to get the feedback from how it's working. So the one Jimmy mentioned there, we'll get whatever charts he provides, we'll get those up on both the USA Football website, yours, and we'll also get it up on the First Down Playbook at blog.firstdownplaybook.com for all of you guys out there who are like me and are a little bit more visual and need to see what he was talking about instead of just hearing him talk.
Coach, I think the great part about this podcast and our game in general is that you can always learn something. And I learned something here today for sure from Coach Arthur, and I'm excited for our show next week as well with another one of the experts you've lined up for us.
It's been fun. It'll be fun. 4 out of 15. Here we go.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.